You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
It's 11, almost 11:33 on Goldhawk Fights Back for You. I've got a book in front of me. Hear me flipping through it? Yes, you can. Beyond Age Rage, How the Boomers and Seniors Are Solving the War of the Generations. David Kravitz wrote the book. It was officially released on Friday, I believe. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, sir.
And the War of the Generations. Now, tell me what you mean, first off, by the war between the generations. Who is fighting whom here?
Well, the war is positioned mainly as a function of what the media is saying. And you have the boomers and seniors on one side and the younger generations, mainly the millennials, because they're coming out of university. They don't have that first job yet, some of them.
The so-called Generation Y?
Generation Y, okay. Or the millennials.
All right.
Roughly 1982 to 2000, so the younger millennials are
my
still
kids.
In high school. Yeah, my kids.
kids
my kids,
too.
Yeah.
All right, we're well-positioned right. then to talk about this.
Right, exactly. Right. And so you have the boomers and seniors not getting out of the way, clogging the jobs pipeline, demanding pensions, health care, and all that. The millennials struggling to get that first job and to get rolling, and fighting maybe for education funding, which is a little bit under pressure. And that's supposedly the battle.
Well, you say supposedly, and I mean, when I thought about the concept and I knew you were writing the book and then we'd have an opportunity to talk about it, I thought, did I miss this? It seems as though I missed the age rage. It seems to be raging here and there, but is it still on the upswing? Are we going to hear more unkind words between these two generations, or is it just sort of fluttering along?
Well, that's partly the point of the book, is that there's a difference between what we're hearing, mm-hmm. what you're seeing in the headlines, because actually it's interesting, when I started writing the book, the phrase wasn't as common as by the time I finished. It seems you can't pick up the paper today without reading about the battle of the generations, the war on the young, the war between the generations. So the rhetoric we are hearing about, the reality is that the natural conflicts between the generations, and there are some, are being solved already as we go along.
Well, I think they're being solved in a natural kind of way. What I found very interesting about the book is you say that the boomers and the zoomers and the seniors, I always get screwed up on the technology, but I have to thank you because you had a little glossary at the beginning. And I was born in 1943, and I always considered myself a war baby, right?
Right.
But you are suggesting in this book, sir, that I can be declared a boomer as well. Maybe a senior boomer.
Yeah, early boomer.
Early boomer.
And I am, too. I was right at the end of the war. And then some demographers say, you know, it's funny, some demographers say, no, it starts in 1946. Others say, well,
after the war, yeah.
If she was pregnant before the husband was demobbed, then the baby counts as a boomer. So it's a little bit, but we're both in that same
vintage.
We can
still be in that same. But the point is, it's the boomer zoomer seniors, really, who have made a pretty large impression on history and culture and civilization as they've gone along, when they were young, when they were middle-aged, now that they're getting on. And it is the boomers and zoomers who essentially are changing things now for the millennials. The boomers and zoomers, I think, and this is the point of your book, are still leading the way.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the interesting thing is that now it's become commonplace to look at the boomers and some of the seniors, say 65 plus, 70 plus. Well, we're reinventing aging.
I'm 69. I'm not a senior. Okay.
Not at all.
All right. Okay.
So we're reinventing aging, and that's almost become a cliche. Look at these people acting younger. Look at these people still working. Look at these people still active sexually and still active in the society and doing things. But now what's revealed here is that that same reinvention is also spilling over to the younger generation.
How so now?
Because we are reinventing parenthood. We are reinventing how you help the next generation coming in behind you. So as we stay active longer, there is a natural impact on the generations coming in behind us. And now this whole reinvention of aging is a reinvention of youth. We're looking at adulthood now. It's moving from an aberration, oh, look at those slacker kids in the basement, to, hey, wait a minute, maybe that's just the way it's going to be. Because if you live to 90, and we're pushing toward 100, the centenarians
supposedly,
the fastest growth, maybe even more, how can we necessarily expect adulthood to start when it started for us? Maybe it's, this is all inevitable.
So adulthood starts at 30, maybe?
If you live to 110.
Shiver my timbers.
Well, I'm in the same boat. But it looks like an aberration, but it's actually becoming maybe a little bit more of the norm. And certainly for the millennial generation, it is.
And us boomers as well, we were often accused of being the helicopter parents, you know, always getting those participant medals for our kids, whether they won or not.
Right.
You know, always being very, very involved in their lives. It looks like that's really continuing in a somewhat different form.
Well, it is continuing. First of all, I think that the education system that we fostered didn't necessarily do the millennials any favors. I don't think they're, as a generation, and we're, you know, generalizing here, there's many exceptions, but they're not as equipped to deal with the world into which they're coming in as adults, as the boomers were, partly I think because of the education that they went through. But now the boomers and some seniors are stepping up and saying, okay, if they can't get a job, if their BA is not equipping them for a career, either they're going to be on the payroll forever or they're going to be on the payroll for the next little while. You know, so we are writing the
check. Or it's a graduated payroll, right?
Exactly.
It may end by age 30.
Right.
Yeah.
And so initially, it manifests itself as a short-term fix. But now what we're seeing is the combination of the boomers can't afford to retire, the millennials can't afford to buy a house. Maybe the whole concept of the grand family or the multi-generational household starts to have more validity. And that's becoming, instead of a tiny little niche, an ever bigger trend that we're
keeping
an eye on.
We're going back to the Waltons.
We're going back to the Waltons.
In an odd
some developers are actually designing houses and building them with that in mind.
With that multi-generational aspect. Right,
as opposed to the retro granny flat. You know, well, let's make it work because granny's moving in.
Now it's granny's flat. She's going to let the kids back
move
in, right?
But what if the real place that goes is the hybrid model, which I'll touch on in the book, that the family makes a decision right from the beginning to buy accommodation, let's say, whether it's two townhouses or a big house, or that can serve that purpose for generations to come.
The other thing about the millennials is the fact, and you show studies and quote authorities in the book talking about the fact that they are, and I'll use a few descriptive words, as a group, generally, not everybody, not your kids, not my kids.
Of course not.
But are the millennials are unfocused, non-ambitious, have a sense of entitlement that bears no resemblance to reality.
Well, I think that there's a lot of evidence that that's true. And I thought that when I did the research for the book, the most striking example was to compare the boomers, not as they are today, because you could argue all through history the adults always know more than the kids and have more experience and a bigger network and all that. But the boomers as a generation, when we were in our sort of reformist, never trust anybody over 30.
Wear a black armband, carry the banner.
Right. But what did
chant.
We? What did we go after? We went after, as a generation, it was the war in Vietnam. It was civil rights in Canada, if you will, Trudeau mania. The boomers got what they went after, and the millennials, you know, you look at the Occupy movement, is sort of all posing as something,
and I'm not. That's an evidence of the unfocused nature, perhaps.
Yes, yeah. And I was careful in the book when I talked about this not to attack the motivation. Let's say that it's a worthwhile cause, but they don't have the patience and the focus to get the same things done. There was a study done by.
But that can't just be education. That's something. No. That's something they learned from us. Unfortunately,
well,
you suppose
the,
in a backhanded way.
In a backhanded way, I think it's partly taking the self-esteem movement to its absurd extreme, that if everything is about how you feel about yourself and not about what results are you actually accomplishing, you get a, when I was in university or you're in university, if we got a C or a D on an essay, it was up to us to fix that problem with the professor. Today, the mom and dad come racing in saying, you can't do this to Junior. He needs that grade. He needs an A to get into grad school. Yeah, but he did a terrible essay. I don't care what it is. So he's got this whole detachment from outcomes. And I think the detachment from
made them soft in a way. We've made them a bit soft. Maybe that's it.
I think we've...
Through love.
No, no, for sure.
And attention.
Absolutely.
And all the best reasons that boomers always have.
Right.
We've not been kind to our kids by making them a little tougher.
I think a little tougher and also a little bit maybe more aware of some connection between concrete outcomes or results and rewards, so that there's this kind of, if I feel a certain way about it, it must be so. And I've got, as you read the book, I entered very good comments from Professor Ken Coates, who wrote a very good book about the university system. It's not just me sort of venting. You know, I mean, the fact that there's a Facebook group for adult children of baby boomers sort of tells you a lot, I think, doesn't it?
There was a Facebook group for everything.
But who would have ever dreamed that one?
Yeah, well, no, that's
who would have ever dreamed?
That's way down the specificity trail. I give you that, right?
I think it is, yeah, exactly.
But the interesting thing about all of this, and I point it up again because I really think it's the backbone of the book, the baby boomers still are winding up being the advance guard on all these changes that are coming. They're the ones.
Yes.
Still, we are the ones still.
Right.
I'm not trying to blow our own horn here, you know, David, but we're the ones.
No, we are, because if you jump cut 100 years to the world that the kids are going to grow up in, 100 years from now, it'll be very different in the attitude to education, to jobs, to retirement, to what's expected at every generation. We are pioneering all those adjustments now in our own way. You know, imperfectly, but we are.
Do you think, are the baby boomers generally, and how should I put this? Are we damaging the millennials today? I forget about being helicopter parents back then. The situation now. Are we really occupying jobs that our kids should have? What evidence is there for or against that in particular?
Well, I think you have to divide the question into two. Okay, if we're staying in the workforce longer, if we're not retiring on schedule at age 65.
Guilty.
Right. Then I think the answer is no, we're not occupying jobs that they could have. We're stopping the domino theory of the VP gets his gold watch at 65 and everybody moves up one and there's an empty office at the bottom.
Yeah.
So that's not happening.
It doesn't work anyway.
But if I'm that person who has a contribution to make, and remember the majority of boomers are seriously underfunded for retirement purposes and for longevity. So that's not happening. On the other hand, if you take a look at, particularly in the U.S., with the home foreclosures and the seniors coming back into the labor force and going to work at McDonald's, and then McDonald's suddenly realizing, my goodness, they're better workers than the younger people, then yes, we are competing.
That's direct competition.
Direct head-to-head for that traditional startup job. Never mind that you're a law graduate in the U.S. and you have $200,000 worth of income, and you're also competing with a job at McDonald's, which is a whole other problem. Yeah. But I'd say some of us are, but some of us aren't. But it's primarily due to the fact that we have unmet financial needs. I don't see a lot of seniors going to work at McDonald's just out of spite for the millennials. You know,
economic. Well, but then other boomers, of course, are staying on the job just because they want to be able to continue to buy the toys.
For sure.
Got to remember that.
For sure. It's a combination. And by the way, that's like sort of a perfect storm for the millennials, because on the one hand, their bad luck to come along just when the boomers have said, you know, I really like being a player. I'm not going to be on the shelf. And, oh, by the way, I need the money. So that's like a double whammy.
That's right.
It's like a double whammy.
It's 11:46. If you would like to join in this conversation, whether you're millennial, boomer, zoomer, senior, zoomer, whatever you want to call yourself, give us a call at 416-360-0740 or 866-740-4740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
Talking to David Kravitz about his new book, Beyond Age Rage, a fascinating point in there you make, David, where you say that millennials are increasingly taking the advice of boomers and accepting emotional support from the boomers. That's nothing we ever did with our parents when we were that age. That's really changed then for the current millennial generation, hasn't it?
Yes, that's correct. And there was a study I quoted in the U.S. that said that 80% of baby boomer women, for example, said that they're putting out more money and more advice and more involved than their parents were of them.
Yeah.
So the boomers are staying in. That's what I talked about earlier about the reinvention of parenting. It goes on a lot longer now.
Yeah. who thought it was ever going to be over, right?
Right.
Here's Terry on the line from Hamilton. What do you think about all this, Terry?
I think as regards to retirement age, a lot actually depends on the job.
Yeah.
Like I can't see somebody in the steel industry, which is what I worked in, and mill writing, physical labor type of job, doing the job as well as an 18, 20-year-old.
Well, and in fact, those workers wouldn't want to stay on, would they? They'd be...
I don't know. Place I worked, there's a few stayed after they were 65.
They stayed till 65, yeah.
It kind of annoyed me because I was active in the union.
Yeah.
We fought long and hard to get a clause in the contract. We call it the 30 years and out, where guys, if they did 30 years, they could retire before 65.
Yeah.
And the members wanted this. When we got it in, hardly anybody took advantage of it.
Yeah, but things have changed a bit, at least in some jobs, hasn't it?
Yeah, I can see that, but I kind of feel sorry. Well, not sorry, but I can understand the company. I don't think like a 67-year-old can do a physical job as good as a younger guy.
If it's a demanding physical job, Terry, I think everybody would agree with you.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I know a few people who stayed just for, I mean, we all stay for the money.
Yeah.
But basically, hey, they can't get rid of me no matter what I do. I can sit about, smoke, go and drink coffee.
Thanks, Terry. Thanks very much. No, Terry's got a point. Yeah. I mean, if it's hard physical labor, I understand that. In fact, getting out before 65 is probably advisable.
Correct.
Your body might be a bit tired. You may have a few injuries you've picked up along the way, and you're just not able to do a strenuous job anymore.
Right. Although in some jobs, and I'm talking not so much physically, but union jobs, there was quoted in the book that recently the UAW in the United States has been forced to accept contracts with differentiated wage rates that favor the older workers and not the younger workers, which was something they never entertained before.
No, in fact, they were dead set against, weren't they?
Right.
So times are certainly changing.
The economy has produced that crunch, and so that's another stress on them. And to Terry's point, even though after they retire from that physical job, the boomers are the record number of franchises, small businesses going on to stay in the game, if you want to talk about income. Mm-hmm. Maybe not in the original job, but in some new job, work at home.
Going to live to be 90 years old or 100, as the millennials could live to be 100.
Correct.
There's not much stopping that.
No.
We're going to need a few different professions or maybe a few reinventions of our professional lives.
We are.
Going from A to B to C.
And the millennials themselves can only dream of being able to retire at 65. I mean, if they live, because the math is simple.
But if they're going to live to be 90, they don't want to retire at 65. What are you going to do for 35 years? How much golf can you do?
Right. And can you acquire enough money in 45 years, let's say, or 40 years, age 25 to age 65, to fund you for another 30 years? And the answer for most people is no, I can't. So I got to keep working longer.
The great boomer fear. I do not wish to outlive my money.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Well, the good news is you're going to live longer. The bad news is you're going to live longer.
Right.
Where do you get enough money for it all? So that's one of the things that's driving it. But it's really a function of longevity because most people cannot accumulate enough money in 40 years of working, even with pensions, to pay for 40 years of life afterwards.
But as this plays out over generations, the boomers now will be dragging along the millennials and preparing the way for a time where the millennials will have that kind of lifespan as well. Maybe not get into full functional adulthood till 30, but that's okay if they're going to live to be 90.
Exactly right. That's exactly the point that you said earlier about us being the pioneers, the boomers, because what today looks like, oh my gosh, people aren't retiring at 65. So we're starting to struggle with what does that mean? In the future, that'll be, well, that's the norm.
Yeah.
That's the norm. Same way as right now, we don't think any longer of the Canadian population being a majority of people living on farms. We don't think of the average age being 45. We think all that's in the past. So we're now foreshadowing the future.
Here's Billy on the line from Scarborough. What do you think, Billy?
Oh, hi, Dale.
Hi.
Hello, David.
Hello.
I didn't catch the beginning of... the conversation, you touch on the word or term millennials.
Yeah.
Is that millennials in your glossary as a brief description? In other words, what's millennials in basic terms?
All right, give us the age rate.
Okay,
the
millennials,
range.
Which are sometimes called Generation Y, and you're right, there is a glossary at the beginning of the book.
Yeah. Okay.
Sometimes referred to Echo Boomer. I mean, there's a whole bunch. But let's say millennials or Gen Y are... people born from the early 1980s to the late 1990s, although some demographers push it to the year 2000. So you got people who are about young to mid-20s right now, and the youngest of them, the very youngest of them might still be in high school, but the number that we're really concerned with, the majority of them are people who are in university or recent graduates, sort of coming into their own and trying to get that first job, that first apartment, that first starting up a family.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You get it?
All right, I got it. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, Billy. So then how does Generation X play into this?
Well, generation...
But relate X to Y here.
Okay, so Generation X is the generation immediately before Gen Y, and they were born between the early 60s till the late... to the early 80s, if you will.
Well, then what are relationships like between Y and X and Y?
Well, here's the interesting thing. Everything I've read, and, you know, you read people and there's always except, but Generation X, they see themselves as the cleanup crew for both the boomers that are older and the Gen Y that are younger, or the millennials that are younger. They see themselves as, I was born to these... run up everything on the credit card, baby boomers. Thanks a lot, mom and dad, if I'm that age.
Yeah, right.
And I got these completely dysfunctional millennials coming in behind me.
That I'll have to hire someday.
That I'm going to have to hire someday.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I'm the adult in the room, and I can sort of chuckle at the grandpa thinking he's still young and at these loser millennials, and it's all going to fall on me, but that's okay. I'm used to it by now. That's kind of their attitude.
So who gets to laugh last year, I wonder?
Well, I think whoever's left standing, you know. But they are much more goal-oriented. There's a big shift there from... they sort of inherited, I think, some of the work ethic of the boomers.
Yeah.
And by the way, just as a sidebar, Pew Foundation did a very interesting study in the States where they asked each generation, what is your leading characteristic in your eyes?
Yeah.
And I forget the Gen X in the middle, but the boomers said work ethic.
Yeah.
And the millennials said, we love tech.
Yeah.
So that was the description that they each gave of themselves.
Yeah.
So they like all the toys. And the boomers are fanatically goal-oriented, achievement-oriented, you know, hyper about getting
what
they
want. Reverse is true for some in both those groups
right? For sure. You can find exceptions. But the Gen Xers sort of look a little bit bemused at the boomers, who they see as maybe a little bit selfish, and they want, but okay, I kind of know how to play in that world. But look at these loser millennials coming in behind me. Oh, my God, I'm going to really have to... fix all that.
So if there is, if this age rage thing which seems to pop up here and there. I certainly agree with that. Is it on the upswing, do you think? Because here's what's going to happen. The economy's not going to improve tomorrow. More and more millennials are graduating. A whole new crop will be graduating from university with a degree coming up this spring. You know that. I know that. And a lot more boomers are going to be saying, I'm hanging on to this job for a couple of years because I want to. I define myself by my work.
Yes.
And I could use the money. And besides, Bobby and Sue are still living at home.
Right. I think what's going to happen is the age rage as an emotion, as rhetoric, as the war of the words, if you will, will ebb, will decrease. And the solutions and the adjustments that are already taking place will become more visible as being a kind of a healthy norm. Right now, the rage is there because this is also unexpected.
It's new.
And it's new, and it's exacerbated by a bad economy, so it makes everything more intense. As people get more used to it, a couple things. The younger millennials, the people born around the year 2000 who may only be in high school, they are not going to repeat the mistakes of the older millennials. There's already some evidence that they're gravitating to more toward colleges. They're gravitating
a job-oriented education.
Yeah, yeah. And the fact that the kids are living at home, as families adapt and make that the structure rather than the Band-Aid, that's going to become more than.
But David, they will move out at some point, don't you think? David.
Well, not if there's a multi-generational home that's designed that way. You might have the family compound that stays in the family for decades, and that becomes a perfectly good solution for all the generations.
Okay. David, thank you very much for coming in and talking about this.
Oh, thank you.
Beyond Age Rage. Good luck with the book.
Well, thanks so much, Dale. Appreciate
it.
Thank you.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.